It's time for Your Pet's Health, brought to you by Pet Docs Veterinary Hospital in Moorhead City. Pet Docs, your other family doctor.
And Dr. Todd Arell is with us and taking your questions, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, I have a couple of things here, just kind of random. We'll just pick one here.
Random thoughts.
Random thoughts, yeah. So these are things out of the news recently. One of these is actually really interesting. It's a conditional approval for what's called, here's the big word, osteosarcoma vaccine. Osteosarcoma is the most common, what we call primary bone tumor in dogs. And it generally tends to affect larger breed dogs, either very young, which is much less common, or much older, middle-aged and older dogs. Large dogs, giant breed dogs like Great Danes and so forth tend to get this. And it's common enough, and it's very, very difficult to treat. And in fact, most commonly, the treatment of choice is amputation of the limb.
That's this affected. A bone cancer?
A bone cancer, yes. So it originates from the bone tissue. So we'll often amputate. Sometimes chemotherapy is used to try and reduce the chance of it having been spread. This interesting vaccine that's been developed, again, it has conditional approval, which basically means it's going to be available in to about 20 or so quote-unquote cancer treatment centers for veterinary cancer oncologists. So it's not going to be one of those things you just walk into your general practitioner and pick up. But basically what they've done is they've engineered a bacterium to, of course, they've inactivated the bacterium so they're not actually infecting you. This is basic vaccine technology. But they've engineered it to express a protein on the cancer cells. And so what it does when this vaccine is given is it stimulates the body's what are called T-cells, white blood cells, to attack this protein whenever they see it. And so they're going to see it on the cancer cells, so they attack the cancer cells. And some of the early studies, and this is always one of those things that's going to change, they did find that it actually helps slow down the spread or the progression or metastasis of the cancer cells, and it actually prolonged life expectancy from a median of about 400 or so days to up to 900 plus days. So you're going from about a year to 2.5, 3 years of survival, which is really encouraging. Conditional license basically means that, you know, they want to get it out there, but they also want to do some more research on it before they give it.
This really becomes part of the research.
It's part of the research. And,
now when you say vaccine, but this is actually a treatment for when cancer is present.
Yes, exactly. And so the terminology is a little bit potentially confusing. But basically it's an immunotherapy is what they call it. But the term most people will latch onto is vaccine. And in ways it's very similar to vaccination, but you're right. It's not something you would give, you know, like you would give a rabies vaccine, for example.
But are there markers in certain breeds of dogs or anything that they might be more likely to get this? Could that advance actually preventative?
I'm sure at some point, people are looking at that. And, you know, how can we predict maybe based on genetic markers in some of these breeds, which ones are more likely to develop this cancer later on and then maybe attack it from that perspective so you can, like you say, prevent it. But that's a good ways off, I would imagine.
That sounds like, though, very promising. And, you know, maybe there's a human application at some point.
Well, absolutely. And there are. I mean, a lot of this research kind of goes back and forth, borrowing, quote unquote, from different species. But yeah, the idea has been around for a while that if you can train the immune system to attack these, these negative or adverse cells, that you could, obviously improve.
Yeah, the T cells have been a key. Researchers have thought have been a key for cancer treatment or maybe even prevention for a long time.
Right. So we'll see. It's it's one of those interesting things. And if anyone out there has had a dog that has succumbed to or has osteosarcoma, they know it's a pretty nasty condition, and it's very painful, obviously. And so it'd be nice to be able to have another weapon in our arsenal.
It would indeed. So, have you seen trials like this for other medicines, and do they take about a decade or so to get widespread?
Yeah, the last conditionally licensed product that we utilized was actually a vaccine as well against periodontal disease, and which is kind of an odd, you know, thought, but it did actually do a good job in the patients that we saw and used the vaccine for. This was a vaccination to try and prevent, you know, some of the bacteria that cause periodontal disease.
One who has that, I think I'd love to have seen that.
It was around, it was conditionally licensed for probably, gosh, I don't know, it seemed like maybe 5, 6, 7 years, and they pulled it.
Uh-huh.
I guess, you know, wasn't as effective as they wanted, and so they nixed it. So, you know, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, it's good that we have the opportunity, that we have a channel to work with products like that, you know, over time. And it's, you know, closely monitored by the FDA, USDA, that sort of thing.
I think probably some listeners are saying there are cancer treatment centers, veterinary cancer treatment centers.
Well, yeah, it's not the name as in the one you see advertised, but yeah, there are veterinary oncologists. It's a specialty that a graduate can go into usually right after, you know, their veterinary school. But yeah, they specialize in cancer treatment. And a lot of times, you know, it's, you know, I can imagine it would be a difficult, you know, sort of specialty to work in just because it's, you know, constantly bad news type of scenario.
Like oncologists. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. But yeah, there are, and there are about 20 or so, when you say cancer centers, maybe groups of oncologists would be a better term that were part of the conditional licensing for this vaccine. So they're going to be the ones that get to use it initially.
Yeah. So, all right. What else do you have for us?
I also wanted to mention, something about heartworm treatment or heartworm prevention, I should say, which hopefully most or all dog owners out there know about heartworm prevention. And it's the monthly, usually, or sometimes now every 6 month treatments, to prevent heartworm disease, which is transmitted, of course, by mosquitoes in dogs, into dogs and sometimes in cats as well. We've heard a lot about resistance to these preventative medications. In fact, every now and then someone will come in and say, well, I don't want to use this because I hear there's resistance to it now.
Right.
Resistance is real, but it's not nearly as widespread as people would like to think that it is. The biggest problem we still have is compliance. Mm. So, you know, people, you know, they'll come in and they'll buy a pack of or six pack of prevention or 12 pack. And then, you know, a year later, it's, oh yeah, I'm still working on that same pack,
yeah,
you know,
right.
So, you know, not giving the preventative as it's, you know, directed is the biggest problem we have in dogs getting heartworm disease. The resistance is real. There is actually documented resistance to all of the different types of heartworm preventions that we use. There are four types, you know, chemicals, and different brands of, you know, products. But it's a very low percentage. We do know that it does tend to be hereditary, and it's kind of weird talking about hereditary in heartworms, but heartworms are just like any other living organism. They have genetics that they reproduce, and they pass on those genes to their quote-unquote offspring. So we do know that the resistance, you know, does seem to be hereditary, but it's not as widespread as people would like for us to us believe.
So take care of your heartworm medicine.
Give it on a regular basis, and
yeah, we just need to make sure. I was kind of bad at that sometimes.
A lot of us have that problem.
Yeah. All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here with Your Pet's Health. If you'd like to ask a question, Kinsey will take your call right now.
That I will. 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today. And again, if you would like to call in with a question for Dr. Todd, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Although we did have the crossover question about cats the last time.
Exactly, yeah. Also wanted to make quick mention, and we don't have enough time to go into this very deeply, but compulsive disorders. Mm-hmm. And talk about, speaking of things that cross over species, right, humans, dogs, and other animals, horses and cats, are compulsive disorders.
Really?
And now we don't really call it obsessive compulsive, because obsessive has a connotation of what they're thinking about.
Right.
But their behavior, the compulsiveness of behavior, things like licking the feet.
Yeah, my beagle used to lick her mm-hmm. right paw.
Right. Licking the feet is a common symptom, what's called fly biting, tail chasing, mm-hmm. hoarding or mm-hmm. nesting type of things. These are all behaviors that we will sometimes see in dogs and other ones in cats and other ones in horses that actually quite closely mirror a lot of what's going on in the brains when they look at functional MRIs, when they actually look at genetic markers in some of these dogs that are very similar to what we see in people with OCD. Mm-hmm. We actually have a lot of sort of trading off of treatment. Options, you know, things that we've used and found successful in dogs and horses are being used by humans mm-hmm. to treat OCD and vice versa. And so when we have people come in and they'll describe things like, oh, my dog licks its feet or what have you, those things aren't automatically compulsive disorders.
Right.
But it may be one of those things that as we go down the list of things that we think it might be and we find that we're not successful with treating those things, that we might turn to compulsive disorders and start treating for those. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we will see a lot of improvement. And the sooner we start treating those disorders, identify them, treat them, the more successful our treatment is. Mm-hmm. Certain breeds certainly have predispositions for this. Doberman Pinscher is probably the most notorious historical one. Yeah. They are well known for licking the feet, that sort of thing.
Because I was concerned that that Sarah was going to lick a fur off.
Right. Or create a hot spot, call it. And that's often what they do. But we have to also remember that there are a lot of other things that can cause those.
If you want to find out more about your own pet's health, contact Pet Docs Veterinary Hospital, petdocs.com, or 240-3885. See you next time.